It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And this time of year, you know, things are, you got to stretch it a little. Like the kids, the kids over in Two Harbors or Duluth area who noted the delivery of seed catalogs, which is always a sign of spring. And there's been a bit of a discussion on KAXE KBXE's Season Watch page about chickadees singing the Phoebe song, and typically it's a hormonal response to increasing daylight and the desire within the flock of chickadees to begin to establish some courtships and some mating rituals, but it's a long way off. It'll be April before they really get serious about it. And as Joel Rosen noted, he and I both have heard these songs as early as December, as late as April, and in between, you know, sometimes some years lots of singing, other years not so much. But you want to listen for the chickadees to hear that little Phoebe, Phoebe song that they sing, which will be has begun and may continue and may be something that you will hear in your neighborhood very soon. I wanted to tell you about an experience I had this past week where I was walking in the woods and I came across some black alder or winterberry, or as we call it here in northern Minnesota, northern holly. And it has these bright orange berries on it in the fall. And we've talked about these berries. They have a chemical in them called saponin. And this saponin makes them pretty distasteful for most of the year. And just before the fall, the plant withdraws the saponin or pulls the saponin back into its stems to keep for next year's berries. And the berries then become palatable and are generally eaten by white-throated sparrows and robins as they move through the area. Well, this year there has been a really overwhelming source of food for the birds in just about every area. Every plant, it seems, in 2019 had a good year in terms of fruits or berries or nuts. And it has made some things like the northern holly slip past the taste buds of the birds. And the other day I was out walking and I came across a bush and it still had berries on it. Not a lot, but some. And the berries had faded from that brilliant red-orange of fall to a kind of a, I don't know, sort of a brownish, orangish, dented mass. Think of an apple, you know, one of those little decorative apples that you see on trees, and you know how after they've gone ripe and then freeze and they start to get sort of, they're no longer plump and round, they're kind of dented a little bit. Well, I thought, hey, you know, I've eaten these before and they've been foul. I'll try another. Why not? The last one didn't kill me. Why not try another? So I picked one and I tossed it in my mouth and I crushed it up against the roof of my mouth with my tongue and sort of mulled it around in there and tasted it. And there was at some point or somewhere in that fruit, there was a tiny bit of sugar because I got this little tiny flash of sweetness. But overall, it was kind of a dull bitterness, not the sort of bitterness of the berries in October, which I would call sharply bitter. And those, I think I told you once on the air that they tasted a bit like earwax. And of course, there was a lot of consternation that even that I would even know what earwax tasted like, but I kind of scoffed at that and thought, you know what, there isn't a kid out there that doesn't know what earwax tastes like, or maybe there are, but they're few and far between. At any rate, they were a tiny bit of sweetness, but a lot of just kind of dull bitter, sort of like coffee bitter, you know, not overwhelmingly, not spit it out bitter like they are in October, but bitter, not, you know, let's see, what did I write? I tried one, and for a brief flash, there was something sweet, but the overall flavor didn't invite seconds. So stay away. I still don't recommend the Northern Holly as something that you might want to eat. Note about Northern Hawk Owls. Robbie TG saw one in the Two Harbors Duluth area at the North Shore Community School, or in that area. And Sean Conrad saw one in the Grand Rapids area up on 7 and 59. So there's some hawk owls moving into the area. They are among the few birds that have come down. We normally, this time of year, our feeders would be covered with red poles, pine siskins, pine grosbeaks. None of those birds are here. Or if they are, they're here in just very small numbers. And so it's a year of plenty of food. As I mentioned earlier, there are lots of food available. And according to the articles that I read from the Canadian perspective, a lot of those birds that would normally come down here for the winter are staying north because there's plenty of food up north for them, and they're not really that interested in traveling for something that they can get right there at home. So a kind of a sparse year. Lots of notes on the Season Watch page about not many birds around, and I would say the same. I would go through like three or four cups, probably close to a quart of sunflower seeds a day on my feeder, maybe even more, like a quart and a half. And now I put a quart of sunflower seeds, or I put 2 quarts of sunflower seeds out there on the feeder, and it's 3 or 4 days before they eat it all. And it's mostly chickadees, red and white breasted nuthatches, downy, hairy, and red-bellied woodpeckers, and blue jays, and that's pretty much it. It's pretty sparse. Not a lot of different birds at the feeders right now. The Tkarchuks, who live up in the Cherry area, have evening grosbeaks, and Cheryl said that they had been gone. They came in November and then disappeared, but they reappeared this past week. And so Merry Christmas to those guys, the lucky ones who got the evening grosbeaks at their house. They've had flocks of evening grosbeaks over for several years, and I just have to consider them blessed, because it used to be they were everywhere here, and then their populations crashed, and now there are fewer and fewer around, and it's the rare home that gets a flock of evening grosbeaks in the winter coming for seeds. Harry and I took a trip down to Long Lake Conservation Center to celebrate Chris Hagen's retirement party last Friday, and it proved to be a dynamic trip. We took County Road 10 along the Mississippi River, on the west bank of the Mississippi River, down to Palisade, and had just a wonderful time together. Harry saw a rough-legged hawk that was hovering and then crashed into the snow to search for lunch. And we saw many flocks of snow buntings. We saw what we think was a shrike. It flew in a shrike-like manner, sort of low over the field. And then right at the end of the field, it swooped up just straight up almost and landed at the top of a tree, which is very shrike-like in its behavior. So we thought maybe it was a shrike. And we had an observation to observe red oaks. There are a lot of red oaks in that country, and a lot of them, especially those on the edges, had many leaves still on them, Lots of red oak leaves still hanging on the oak trees down along the Mississippi River south of Grand Rapids. So interesting looking at that and trying to figure out whether or not it was an edge phenomenon, because I didn't, when you look back into the woods, you wouldn't see a lot of oaks with leaves on them just back in the woods. It was mostly those trees along the edges. And I don't know if it was just because they were easier to see, or if they if there's some difference there due to, I don't know, increased sunlight, bigger leaves, I don't know. But there seemed to be a difference between those trees in the forest and those trees on the edge of the forest. I heard and saw crows this past week, and that's a bit unusual because in normal years, well, let's just say 20 years ago, mid-December was sort of the end of the crow season, and then there were no crows to observe until probably mid-February when they would sort of return. Now, the crows are still migrating. There are still crows heading south, so there are not as many crows in northern Minnesota as there might be, but there are still crows here that have elected to spend the winter this far north. And with this warm weather that we've been experiencing for the last 4 or 5 days, I'm sure that they're happy they made that decision. But that come January and some colder weather, they might have second thoughts about that. I mentioned the red oaks. Another thing that Harry mentioned, you can't believe what a pleasure it is to sit with Harry and ride in a car, because he notices so many things and has so many things to tell us about the world that we're passing. One of the things that he noted was looking at the forest, and in certain areas you have a stands of balsam poplar. And this is also called the balm of Gilead. It is a rather scruffy-looking tree. It belongs to the aspen family, but it's not as healthy as a trembling aspen or a big tooth aspen. Doesn't grow as large, doesn't live as long, has a rougher bark. And Harry, as we're driving along, looked out at this stand of balsam poplar and remarked how sooty the bark looked. And I had to take him at his word, because I couldn't argue. It was, in fact, they did look sooty, the balsam poplar. So if you're driving home for Christmas, heading along the highway, and you're looking at the trees along the way, take a look at the balsam poplars. Take a look at the trees in general. And in some areas, you're going to see these stands of uniform, you know, it's aspens, poplars, clone. So they send, they get a tree started and they send out these roots, and then trees come up from the roots. And so you get a kind of a patch of these trees. And in the case of the balsam poplars, where you get these patches, you're going to be able to discern that clump of sooty looking trees, sooty bark, or kind of grayish black instead of being white or light green or kind of honey yellow like the big tooth aspens. There was a roadkill deer along the river road this past week, and one morning as I drove out, there was a bald eagle standing proudly on top of the bird, or on top of the deer, and enjoying some breakfast. And there were several ravens in the area who were hoping to get a little bit of a bite of that. And that was actually the same spot where I saw the crows. They were there on a different day. But it's amazing how when you get a road-killed animal like that, it really brings a lot of other animals in. And my final note this week was observed yesterday as I was coming home from the bog. I was driving down Blue Heron Drive, and just as I got to my driveway, there was a ruffed grouse standing in an aspen, a trembling aspen, and eating buds. And it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was pretty, the light was low. The sun was low, was a low angle in the sky. And it was, It was certainly not too early for a bird like a ruffed grouse to get out and enjoy some buds. Now, the ruffed grouse eat the aspen buds, and the aspens respond by creating more bitter buds, and then the ruffed grouse move to eating birch buds, and then the aspens recover a little bit, and then the ruffed grouse next year will go back to eating aspen buds, and they alternate between birch and aspen, and if they're too heavily predating on aspen, the aspen respond by putting some really bitter chemicals in their buds to make them less palatable for the ruffed grouse. The grouse would rather eat the aspen bud than a birch bud because it needs to eat more birch buds to get the same amount of protein as it does from the aspen buds. And the longer the grouse spends eating, the longer it is exposed to predation. And so it increases its chances of being killed by somebody who's looking for a meal of ruffed grouse. So interesting to watch the grouse this time of year. Everybody, have a Merry Christmas, and we will bring you Phenology again next week.